Tune it in, check it out, listen up, find out what it is all about.
Welcome, this is Conversations with Matthew Bronson here on KUPR 99.9 FM in the high desert of Placitas, New Mexico. And today we're having a, a impromptu interview about bisons and the woman who, an award-winning filmmaker, documentarian, thought I would have trouble saying that word, but documentarian, about the bisons, and it's going to be premiering the 29th of October down at the Open Space, and we're going to get more of that information. But let me get Elke Dürr onto the program. So good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. And the once I found out that I had this opportunity, and I did a little research about you and the film, it's what I love about doing conversations on KUPR, is that I meet all these interesting people that I would never have heard of, especially in what you could consider a more remote part of the world. You're originally from Germany.
Yes, that's correct.
But you've what brought you to New Mexico?
I came here almost 30 years ago to the U.S. in search of home because I wanted to live somewhere where there were still wild animals and wilderness. And I'd been telling my parents my whole life that I was going to be leaving because when I grew up in Germany, we had pretty much annihilated all wildlife. It was all cultural landscape. And what we had left was a few wild foxes, but even they were being killed because they could have carried rabies. So everything was under control. This was after World War II, and people just did not have any sense for wilderness and wildlife anymore. So,
but from the brief experiences I've had in parts of Germany, there seems to be a lot of agriculture.
Yes.
So I think of animals going with agriculture. I didn't see dairy farms, but were they not there?
In terms of wild animals, no. We didn't have any wolves. We didn't have any more elk where I grew up. No bear, no moose. Everything got killed. And in fact, as a child going through the forest, sometimes we would come across a marker saying, last wolf killed here, 1750. Last bear killed here, 1802.
Was that a marker to
celebrate
the death of the last one?
Uh-huh, yes.
As opposed to, finally. Oh, this is so sad. Oh, finally.
Finally, yes. But I have to say, while I have been living here the last 30 years, the animals have been coming back slowly. So this is really nice. We have over 100 wolves in Germany now. And there's even a marker now saying, welcome back, wolves. So things have changed.
Is it written in German or in wolf or little pictographs?
Yeah, no. in German. I think it has a picture of a wolf on it too, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so what happened, and this has nothing to do while we're speaking today, but we'll get to the point later.
Yeah.
What happened? Change in government or a good lobbying group?
Communism fell, and borders are very hard on the migration of animals, wild animals, right?
Right.
And the wolves, to my knowledge, often got killed while trying to cross the border from Poland into Germany because it was heavily guarded, and they would just shoot them. And they even had border videos of wolves trying to cross the river, and wolves just never made it across. And if they did, they got shot on the German side.
How interesting that it so much parallels what's happening in the world now with human beings.
Yes, exactly, because we're all connected.
How strange.
And I'm glad that you... that you're talking about this, because we are really all connected, and that's a big part of my work. Nobody is separate. You know, what befalls one of us befalls all of us. And actually, one of the native tribes said, look at Brother Wolf. What happens to him will happen to all of us. So there is a connection. We are not separate beings as human beings.
And
we are just another animal.
Yes.
The human animal.
Yes. the most feared predator in all the land.
Exactly.
So, we're referencing wolves because you've previously done an award-winning documentary on wolves.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about that.
It's called Stories of Wolves, The Lobo Returns. It's about our last Mexican gray wolves, the most endangered land mammal in North America. And they're not doing that well. They once roamed all the way from Phoenix to Mexico City. But now we have about less than 100 left in the wild. And I really wanted to do something for the wolves. So I started on this documentary that was completed about 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And how long did it take to make?
Oh, probably 2-3 years. Yeah, filming, editing, everything.
And I'm always curious because, you know, I edit my stuff for the ABQLive.tv, and I'm not making a documentary. I'm just filming some stuff going on. But I look at how much film or how big, how long the file is, and then I want to end up with 11 minutes.
Yeah.
So I think of any big movie, you know, Hercules, Spartacus, Star Wars, they must have hundreds and hundreds of hours of film that they knocked down to 90 minutes. Was yours like that also?
No, I made
sure.
I really made sure that I only filmed really pertinent things and that I had a vision of how I wanted to put it together. And I don't know how many hours I had, but it was...
It was more than the finished product.
Mm-hmm, yes, a lot more, probably okay. 10 times as more.
So
as much, yeah.
You feel their pain.
Yeah, I do. But in the end, it just sort of all came together because I had been spending so much time in the wild with the wolves and interviewing people, getting a grip on everything around wolves in terms of all the different facets of the human interference with the wolves. And so in the end, it just came together beautifully. And it was the same with the bison film.
I find that even on my very amateurish level, that things do seem to fall into place.
Yes.
You don't recognize it at the time.
Yes.
You know stuff is going to have to come
yeah.
out. But magically,
yeah.
you're listening or viewing go, yeah, that doesn't belong, or that really does
yes.
need to. It's
uh-huh.
funny that way.
Yeah.
And so what is the official name of the award for the wolves?
Oh, I got about 4 awards. One is for a woman director, then feature documentary film a few times. So, yeah.
And do you, is it like commercial films where you submit them to the Academy? Or?
It was like an independent film festivals
right.
or...
You consciously put them up for
yes.
award,
mm-hmm.
or
yes.
do you have an agent who?
Yeah, I put them out. Yeah,
okay.
out there.
Mm-hmm. So the one that is premiering
yeah.
here
yeah.
in Albuquerque at the Rio Rancho Open Space, October 29th at 6 p.m.
6 p.m. Yes.
6 p.m. Mm-hmm. But come a little bit early.
Yes, come a little bit early. Bring your own lawn chair mm-hmm. and your
or
own
blanket.
And
yes.
blanket because it's an outdoor event because the bison didn't want any fences or walls. Mm-hmm. They're migratory animals. And so we wanted to do an outdoor screening and it's going to be really nice.
And the name of the film is Walking Sacred Sites.
Yes, Bison Nation, Walking Sacred Sites, because in the cosmology of the native people that I've been working with, the animals are all their own nation. So there's the deer nation, the wolf nation, the bison nation, and bison are also known as buffalo. And I wanted to say that right away because people get confused. Because when the early settlers came, they saw this animal that had already been wiped out in Europe. And so the closest they could liken it to was a buffalo, like a water buffalo or the buffalo
right.
in Africa. So they called it a buffalo, but it's actually called a bison. And unbeknownst to a lot of people, we also have the bison in Europe. And most of us of European descendants wouldn't be here without the bison because our ancestors depended on them too. And
as a food supply?
Yes, as a major food supply. And at one point, we had at least seven different subspecies of the bison all over the Northern Hemisphere, North America and Northern Europe, all the way into Siberia, from France, the British Isles all the way into Siberia. Wow. And you can still see that because if you go to Lascaux, to the cave of Lascaux in France, or to Altamira in Spain, you'll see beautiful cave drawings of our ancestors made of the bison. And to me, it's really interesting because they don't look like, oh, this is my food. No, it's like, this is my friend. This is another fellow being here, you know, because right. they have rendered these amazingly beautiful depictions of our last wild bison. And one of the caves that just got discovered is the cave of Chauvet, or rediscovered because it's never been gone, right?
Right.
But it's been around like for 20 years now, again, knowingly. And I think it's 40,000 years old, the bison drawings in there. So it's beautiful. It's,
right.
it's amazing.
And those scales were kind of lost on me.
Yeah.
Because if you said it was 100,000 years,
yeah.
my impression of how old it was
yeah.
wouldn't change. Even if you said 20,000,
yeah.
that just seems so far
yeah.
ago in, I don't know if I can say human evolution, but in human development.
Yes.
And I know what you're saying about the drawings as, the cave drawings
yeah.
as more of an emotion towards them. Because if I think
right.
of some of the drawings I've seen depicting the drawings in like Egyptian temples,
uh-huh.
and they're throwing arrows or spears
mm-hmm.
at it. It's a very stick figure kind of
mm-hmm.
buffalo type
yeah.
bull kind of thing. Very detached. It's just
yeah.
that's what we're killing.
Yeah.
So different.
No, it's totally different. And I was lucky enough to get the use of one of the especially beautiful depictions
right.
by the Ministry of Prehistoric Art in France.
Right.
And it's very, very exceptionally beautiful. It's definitely not like, this is my hamburger, this is my meat.
Right.
No, it's more like, this is a fellow being on the path with us, and we are very grateful that this being is here, and you can feel it emanating from the depictions. And here, too, we have petroglyphs and pictographs,
yes.
and I saw a 17,000-year-old...
Who don't know, what's mm-hmm. the difference between a petroglyph and a pictograph?
Petroglyph, to my knowledge, is carved, and a pictograph is painted.
Oh, okay.
So I saw a painted depiction of a buffalo from 17,000 years ago in Wyoming, and it's very amazing. Again,
I bet it was only 15,000.
Yeah, who knows? But anyways, yeah, that buffalo, that particular one is already... extinct, you know, because some of the species are gone. We only have the wood bison left and the prairie bison. And some of them have also been intermingling and mixing
right.
with each other.
And when you say we, you're speaking of continental United States or North America?
And Europe.
Mm-hmm. And Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Not specifically the Albuquerque area.
No.
I know
we did have bison here
mm-hmm.
In the northeastern part of the state, what's now the Kiowa grasslands.
Yes.
And to my knowledge, some of the tribes, or all of the tribes, I don't know, went on an annual bison hunt.
Right.
And brought them back down here.
How very
so,
nice.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. I do... I'm not a huge bison burger eater,
yeah.
bison steak. I don't know if
yeah.
I've ever seen bison steak, which makes me wonder, why is there only burger? So someone must be raising them commercially.
Yes, we have about 500,000 bison that are beefalo or cattle that are raised commercially and that are bred with bred with cattle to make it more docile. Because a real bison, and that gets me to a very important part of my work, the 100% pure bison are very rare. We have about 4,000 left in this country. We used to have millions.
I understand you couldn't see anything, as far as I could see, was
yeah.
just buffalo.
Yeah, there were different big herds of, you know.
So when we got down to maybe 50 buffalo?
No, 23.
When they were hunting them,
yeah.
leaving the meat,
yeah.
just taking the hides,
yeah.
when they got down to 100, a couple hundred, when they go, you know, we might want to leave a few so that there can be more later on.
No, actually not. They wanted to kill every single last one of them. But they went to a really, really remote area in Yellowstone National Park.
Right.
Where they were hiding from the guns of the hunters. And they didn't have the long-range rifles at that point. And so they were able to survive because they weren't native to Yellowstone National Park. They were just hiding there, basically. They were driven there from the prairies.
They knew what they were doing?
Yes, because life wants to keep living. And whenever animals or any type of life form on this planet is under a lot of pressure, it will keep going. It will find ways, very creative ways, to keep going. For example, as a child, I became an advocate for what I considered the poor foxes that were under so much pressure because of the possible rabies threat.
Right.
They preemptively killed them all.
But
what happened was the next year, 2 years later, the population was back up because the females that survived the Holocaust of the extermination were not only having like 3 to 4 pups, but 10 to 12. And if they had 10, 8 of them would be females.
Okay.
So it's the same with the coyotes. If they're under a lot of hunting pressure, their population will go back up because they want to survive. They want to stay here.
It's almost magical.
It is very magical. I have had the most amazing 3 years migrating and following the bison and really being a part of, which is our rightful place, yours too, everybody's, a part of the ecosystem.
Sure.
And it's amazing how it works.
Let's go back to Little Elk Yidur in Germany.
Yeah.
A city that we would all recognize?
No, I come from a village of 180 people. That's not on the map.
And why are those 180 people there?
Because that's very common in Europe, you know, little villages.
Right.
Because during the feudal times, the different noble people, like the local baron, would have his serfs in a village that would feed him, fight for him, because we had continuous wars.
And he would protect them.
Yeah, he would basically protect them, but often not from himself.
Oh, no.
Yep.
So when you left, you made a serious impact on the population of the whole town.
Yes, I did.
Percentage-wise.
Yes.
So around what time did you champion the fox?
When I was a little child.
Like what decade?
6 to 8 in the 70s.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So just to get a kind of idea of what the world politics, and I don't know, did your town follow world politics?
I grew up at the border to East Germany, so we were very, very much into world
politics.
We were part of world politics. And I remember when I first started learning English, on Wednesday nights, I would watch the East German news, the West German news, and the American news, because we were in the American occupied zone.
Right.
So that's when I realized that news can be really misleading because I got 3 different kinds of news that night.
You have to change the definition of what news is.
Exactly. What one country really blew up to be really horrible, another wouldn't even cover.
Right.
So that's when I also decided I wanted to see the world for myself.
And in the 70s, the news might have been what Michael Jackson was doing
as opposed
to what was happening in Egypt.
Yeah. But no, we got a lot of news about communism versus imperialism versus democracy and blaming each other.
And here it is 50 years later and nothing's changed.
Yeah.
isn't it odd for, in a somewhat, I'm going to say, restrictive kind of cultural environment at that time, that a 5-year-old would go, I have to worry about foxes?
Well, I was born with some kind of knowledge inside of me of the big herds. And I would always tell my mom in the summer, I would say, Mom, we have to go now and follow the animals. And she said, what do you mean? Because I grew up on an organic farm and we were as stationary as can be, right? Especially in the summer. We weren't following anything. We never went on a vacation. We never went anywhere. And especially in the summer, we had to work. But I would tell my mother, you know, let's follow the herds like the buffalo. And she's like, what do you mean? But for some reason, I knew about the last wild herds. And I would also always ask Santa clandestinely to take back all the toys, the plastic toys that I didn't like right. Legos and Barbies. I didn't like that
you didn't
kind
like
of stuff.
Legos?
No, because I wanted to play with stones and sticks and be outside. And so in exchange for spending time with a reindeer and the wild herds of buffalo. And it never happened until I was 46 years old. And I won't give away the story because come and see the film.
It's part of the film.
It's
okay.
Part of the film. Yes. Well,
brothers or sisters?
I have one brother.
And did he go, Elki, you're crazy?
No. He just looked at me and...
You have family gatherings and everyone go, is something the matter with that little girl? They accepted it?
No, because they accepted it because my great grandmother and my grandmother really understood what that was all about.
Okay.
Because, you know, growing up on an organic farm, you're really close to the land. So they could really understand what was.
Yes.
What was going on.
It wasn't like
on.
You were fourth generation in Manhattan, New York, and then all of a sudden this kid comes out with this. That would be really
they
strange.
Just said she
it was normal.
She just really loves wild animals. And that's important because nobody else does. And they're almost gone, you know, so let her. Leave her alone, you know. So as long
as... So how do you go from... there must have been a formal school that, you know, junior high school, whatever.
Yeah.
And at what point do you decide, I'm leaving?
Oh.
And then where am I leaving to and why?
I once saw a documentary when I was about, we didn't have TV till late, but somehow I saw a documentary about Canada and somebody living in a cabin with wolves around and bears. And I told my parents, that's how I'm going to live. So I wanted to immigrate somewhere. First, I thought I was going to go to Canada, but I came here to New Mexico and got taken in by one of the tribal members who really understood what I was all about. And instead of saying, oh, this is crazy, she said, of course. Yes, you're here to be a voice for the animals, so
but
go for it.
Going from a young adult.
Yeah. Well, I went to college in Germany, and then afterwards I came here.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you...
I was 22 when I came here.
And did you have a particular course of study?
Yes, I'm a speech and language pathologist. So I worked in that field for a long time here in Albuquerque and Las Lunas.
So even further removed from following bisons.
Well, it's communication.
A naturalist or
it's still communication, you know, communication disorder. So it is communicating. But on a different level. And I now see 20, 30 years later, I see how it all came together.
Right.
Because really all is one. And communicating with the animals and making sure that we can communicate is the same thing.
Certainly. But you didn't ever have to deal with a bison who had a lisp or something. You didn't give them speech.
They have really great language, snorting type of language. It's really beautiful.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, so, I mean, we're kind of dancing all around the bison nation. Walking sacred sites. It is October 29th.
Yes.
Do you know what day of the week that is?
Saturday, it's a Saturday.
Saturday. Mm-hmm. Okay. 6 p.m. Come early.
Yeah.
Make a picnic of it. Probably want to bring a sweatshirt. It was 48 in my house this morning.
Bring a lawn chair. Yeah.
Yeah.
After screening.
Watch the screening, and then there'll be a discussion afterwards.
Yes. Q&A afterwards.
Yes.
And also, walking sacred sites. One of the Lakota elders, Rosalie Little Thunder, called, and she has passed on since, has called the bison walking sacred sites because they take care of our biggest sacred site, the earth.
Okay. So you've made the film about the wolves.
Yeah.
You were recognized by several important documentary review committees.
I've shown it internationally too in Europe, and I've done a tour, an outreach tour.
Right.
And just recently also I published a book, Wolves and Humans, A New Story of Coexistence, because that's also something I've been wanting to do all my life.
And how is that doing?
To write a new story. Yes, it's going out into the world. Yeah, I'm disseminating it now when I do outreach screenings in the schools.
Right.
To the teachers and in Wolf Country, because I never liked Little Red Riding Hood. I always looked at my grandma and I thought, I would never mistake my grandma for a wolf. And there's something wrong with that girl. And
yes.
This is not right. And so I wrote the antidote to it, Wolves and Humans, A New Story of Coexistence.
Now, most people who listen to KUPR or view me on abqlive.tv know that most of the time we record on site at the Placidus Community Library in the Collin Room, which rotates art, local art, every month.
Yeah.
It's a great resource.
Yeah.
So we're at the library. So guests who have at one time or another written a book, I always ask, well, is there a copy at this library?
Yeah, great question. I brought one today.
There you go.
And I would like to donate it to the library.
Excellent.
And I bet they have to catalog it, but
sure.
It'll be available here, I hope.
Excellent. All right, so you've done all that. What happened that said, you always knew you were going to make a next documentary, and then it said, all right, bison. Or you were just being an adult, making a living, whatever. And then one day you go, I'm making a bison movie.
Oh, that's a great question. I think it's been with me my whole life that I wanted to be instrumental or a part of the thriving and the returning of the endangered animals.
Right.
And especially the bison, since they were in my consciousness my whole life for some reason. And so I thought it would be a great idea to work with them, because when they come back, so many other species come back. Because
yet you did the wolves first.
Yeah, exactly. The wolves, it's the same thing. When the wolves come back, everything else
right.
comes back.
But I would think if you had this passion, this connection
yeah.
to the bison,
yeah.
that would have been the first film.
Oh, well, it so happened that the wolves were being reintroduced into New Mexico and Arizona, and they didn't do that well. And I had the same kind of connection to the wolves all my life too, because they were gone. And I felt really lonely without all the wild animals.
Yet two totally different kinds of animals.
Oh, they're
a major predator, and then just this big lunk that goes around and eats prairie grass.
Well, they're really connected, because we had a bison wolf here too that specialized in taking out the old sick and weak bison.
Right.
So everything really is interconnected. You know, it's somebody once said, "Oh, you like the big charismatic animals," but it's not true. I like all life. It's the same with the bees. I would love to do something for the bees and our pollinators, because they're suffering so much too.
The pollinators seem to come up in so many conversations,
yeah.
and I don't mean that facetiously.
Yeah.
But you know, being out here in Placitas, the high desert, and just all the abundance of life that
yeah.
if you don't look closely, you don't see all of it. But
yeah.
pollinators is huge, or lack thereof.
It's very huge. And a pollinator specialist once told me that we have 200 different wild pollinators here, not just our honeybees, but
right.
200. We are one of the most diverse states in terms of pollinators, if I recall it right. And there would be no food without them.
Absolutely.
And for them, it's even harder, like because we spray them with chemicals. So it's kind of a mass extermination, whereas we kill a wolf or a bison one at a time.
Right.
We exterminate our pollinators by the millions, basically. You know, like I was up in Montana, and 5 o'clock in the morning in the summer, the crop dusters come by. And it's really like it's exterminating all life, basically, all insect life.
The intent is not to kill the bees, it's to have the crops not have insects. It's just a really bad, stupid byproduct.
Yes, it kills every insect.
It's not like
yeah.
what you had in Germany where it's kill all the animals.
Yeah.
They're different motivations.
Yes, yeah, but you can't distinguish, you know.
Well,
so
the
when,
result
you,
is everybody's
when you
dead.
Drop, when you drop poison, it'll affect all life.
Right.
And it'll affect us too, because I was at the dentist's office there in Montana, and this lady had all her teeth removed. And I was wondering why, because she was fairly young, and she said, well, Roundup got into my neighbor's spilled Roundup, and it got into my well.
Right.
And it killed my teeth. And so we are affected by it, too. We are affected by pesticides in food water and air as well. So really, it's always connected.
And
so we need to... yes, exactly. So we really need to think about that.
Let me drag you back to the bison.
Yes, please.
You wanted to make this documentary.
Yes.
When you make documentaries, do you go, here's the message I'm going to get across, or do you just, like, Jane Udall, whoever, who lived with the chimpanzees for decades, you just document it, and then that becomes a documentary? Do you have a plot, like a, you know, like X-Men?
It's great that you mentioned Dr. Jane Goodall, because she has a message about the bison in the film. So it's great.
Surprisingly intelligent. I made myself all the time.
Yeah, she's been my heroine my whole life. She's awesome. Well, I learn from the animals. And I go out there and I put myself out there and I say, well, what do you need me to say? What do you need me to bring to the people? Because I'm going to be your voice. So,
well, first, how do you get permission to do that? Because from where I have seen bison or other previously wild animals, they don't want you to get real close.
No, that's not a good idea. And I put that in the film, too. You have to establish a relationship with the animals. And
but you must have to get government permission or somebody.
Well, the tribes all have bison on their reservations now, and I'm working with the tribes.
Right.
So they're working with me, or we are working together,
sure.
You know. So they have signed a treaty for the return of the bison to like 16 reservations.
Right.
And they have a herd usually. And a wild herd came down from Canada to the Blackfeet Reservation just this April.
Okay.
So it depends, but I don't go close. No, that's not
You're
my
out
intent.
You don't pitch a tent with a little campfire.
I do pitch my tent in the prairie. Yes.
The open prairie.
Yes, the open prairie to see what's going on, but I never encroach on the animals because that's not my intention.
But what if they want to come check you out?
Yes, they can.
But do they? Are they protecting their area and going? What doesn't belong in this picture? Oh, it's Elkie.
But they know that humans belong too, but only in a certain way. If we are just these killer machines, then we don't belong. But if we are part of the landscape, then we do belong, and they are quite kind.
Were you there enough to like name some of them? You know, the way Jane did with the chimps, they didn't give them like numbers. Weren't
yeah.
like fluffy and
yeah.
furry or.
I didn't do that, but one of my friends from the Nakota Nation told me that I was bison and wolf scout. What that means is I was going around from herd to herd, and they're separate now. They used to be like one or two big herds, right? And they always knew where their ancestors were and what was going on because they were together. Now they're separate, and they're always wondering what's going on. So... my friend told me that I was bison scout because whenever I would go meet a herd, they would read the messages from their other family members from another herd off of my body and give me their messages. And so what really was amazing was the lead cow would always come out and sort of communicate with me first. It was really awesome. She sort of knew what I was doing. And,
could you ever get hand close? Could you pet them or feed them an apple? Or
I didn't want to do that. No, they're wild animals. They need to be spoiled.
But they're so huggable.
They are. But, you know, they also can tear you apart. And people have been killed by their horns in Yellowstone mm-hmm. National Park because they would go too close and they would feel encroached upon. Sure. So you really have to also read their body language and their signs because they tell you when you're too close.
Do they have little spats within the herd where they, you know, they fight with each other?
During rutting season, they measure their strength, and then the young bulls a little bit. And then sometimes, you know, when they get too close to each other, they will tell each other, too, and you'll see it.
Do they have a predator?
Well, we killed the wolves.
Well, I mean, but normally the wolves would eat the buffalo?
Yeah.
Okay.
The wolves.
And they're just strictly vegetarian?
And they really keep the prairie very healthy because they migrate. Our domesticated animals,
right?
They stand around, eat everything within reach, then go a few steps, eat everything in reach, and overgraze a lot. But bison migrate, so it doesn't get overgrazed. And also, they are curbing the growth, and so it grows faster afterwards and more dense.
Like pruning a tree.
Yeah, it's very beautiful the way they do it, and their hoofs, they evolve together with the prairie. They're one entity. It's amazing. It's beautiful to see. Their hoofs turn loose some seeds that need to be reseeded after the next rain, and they take dust baths in bison wallows that they create. So after the rain, we have little ponds there where the amphibians thrive.
Sure.
And it's really a beautiful system that I was privy to getting to know. And it's just amazing because the prairie is such an amazingly alive system.
And you didn't know any of this before you followed them?
Intuitively, I knew, but then I really learned it, and it was amazing. I put myself out there because the prairie has very severe weather. It can snow horizontally. You can have 100 degrees scorching heat and always 60 miles an hour winds going through. I think there's 300 wind days. We have as many wind days in the prairie as we have sun days in New Mexico. So it's very severe weather, but they were engineered for it.
They look sturdy.
They are very sturdy. And they have that hump, the prairie bison, on their neck.
Mm-hmm.
And that's for digging in the snow to find food.
Oh.
And that way, they are also feeding the rest of the animals. Because after they have fed on the grasses, the elk can come. Because the elk could never eat the grass, you know, could never dig that deep.
Sure.
So the bison are basically feeding the elk and the deer as well.
Okay. So they're the snowplows.
Yes, they're the snowplows. Yeah. They're amazing. And they hunker down. When there's a storm, they face the storm.
Okay.
And hunker down.
Kind of like penguins?
They're outweighted, yes. Mm-hmm. And so, but our cattle turns away from a storm and gets drifted into and over fences and perishes. So last December, in a snowstorm here in New Mexico, we lost 30,000 cattle.
Wow.
And we lost 60,000 cattle about 3 years ago in South Dakota, I believe, or North Dakota. I think it was South Dakota. 60,000 cattle. So cattle are really not made for the prairie. And I wanted to try it out myself, too. And I stayed there in the winter and, you know, like all seasons. And it is a really severe environment. Just this past July, the rainstorms and the thunderstorms, it was amazing. I fell asleep to dry lightning, and I woke up to lightning striking next to my tent.
How scary.
Yeah, it was really amazing. But actually, it was more interesting than scary.
I would think it would almost be deafening, though, the sound.
It was, because because it was very, very loud, and then also the smell of the lightning.
Yes.
But I also realized how important lightning is to the earth, because it really recharges it.
And it starts forest fires, which...
Yeah.
If we live nearby, we don't like that, but it really is
important. It's so important. And it's so intricate, the system that nature put together. It just, everybody feeds each other. And I also put that in the film, so come see it. It's beautiful.
It is literally mind-boggling how complex it is, yet so simple. But I want to go back to the event on the 29th, because you're having some important people there.
Yeah.
There is going to be an introduction and blessing by
Peggy, well-known Buffalo, one of my friends from the Crow Nation in Montana. She's going to come down. She was named after her great-grandmother. Well-known
and that's all Buffalo. One word, no spaces?
Yes.
Well-known Buffalo.
Well-known Buffalo. And she's going to do a blessing, and she really wanted to be here. Okay. She also really welcomed me into the tribe and taught me a lot about bison and how important the bison are to the native people. And we can get to that maybe after.
And then also there's going to be a buffalo dance.
Yes. Jim Red Eagle from Rapid City is going to come down from South Dakota to do a buffalo dance for us to also demonstrate the importance of the bison-human relationship for his tribe. And that's very, very important. And now I can talk about it because what happened after colonization here, people were forced onto reservations, the bison were gone, and they had to eat commodity food, basically white flour and lard, was something that they weren't used to. And so, sugar, is the number one killer, basically, on the reservations. So people have diabetes. It's very rampant. So the return of the bison not only means spiritual uplifting for the people because they were so tied to the animal, but also healing in terms of the body.
Right.
Because the bison really provided them with everything. And community gardens are now also springing up on the reservations. And we often gave the people land where they would never live normally. Right. They were migratory. They might have gone through in the summer, but now they have to live there in the winter too. Like I said, snows horizontally. They're stuck there in the middle of nowhere. We gave them really, inadequate land to settle all year on. And so it's very difficult, but they are starting on community gardens. And if the bison comes back, then spiritually and physically, there will be a huge healing, and it's already taking place.
Can you speak at all, Elke, about the bison in the Albuquerque metroplex? I always use that term, and it's probably wrong. But, Albuquerque, Santa Fe, Belen, Placidas, Rio Rancho. Is there anything going on bison-wise around here?
Well, they used to roam all the way into Mexico, from Mexico to Canada up to Alaska, right? And there is some captive ones. I believe Isleta still has some. There's some. Sandia Pueblo had a herd last time I knew I was here. So, and also some of the tribes signed that treaty for the return of the bison. So, but I don't know if they're really wild or if they're beefalo and or cattle-loo.
But
most of them are crossed. It's kind of like us. We are all a mixture too. So,
They say even now we're 2 to 4% Neanderthal in our DNA. Here it is. Millions of years, 20,000 years. We've spoken about that before.
So if you're eating a bison burger, chances are there's 30 to 50% beef in it.
Wow.
Be aware of that.
Okay.
Yeah. And to be really pure nowadays is difficult. We have to work with what we have.
Yes.
And do our best. But for the prairie, the best is really to have the bison on the prairie. In terms of all the vegetation, the fauna, the flora, and everything. And also for the bison, because, when all those cattle died, people say, it's hard on the cattle industry. But all I could think of was dead bodies. It's hard on the cattle, to lose, to see 30,000 dead cattle. I mean, that broke my heart. Or 60,000 up in the Dakotas. That really broke my heart. And we have to take that into consideration too.
And just the massive public health cleanup.
Yes, exactly.
I can't imagine how many square miles that takes up.
And what that looks like when you discover them when the snow melts,
So,
really, we need to look at that, what we are doing as humans and where we are really still disconnected and where we can do better. Because we really are a part of the ecosystem. And that's the biggest thing that I learned in the last 3 years, migrating with the bison and working and living with the native people. We are a part of it all. We are not separate.
And do you have a permanent home? I mean, is Albuquerque where your mail gets delivered?
Yes, Albuquerque is where my mail gets delivered, but I spend a lot of time up in Montana. Yes.
Okay. And thinking on a reservation?
Yes, on the reservation, on different reservations, yeah, and also in the Whitefish area near Glacier National Park.
Right.
I also spend some time near Yellowstone National Park, basically all over Montana.
And that's mostly filming the whole time?
Yeah, filming, understanding what's going on, doing some work on the reservation with the young people, doing film presentations, doing book signings.
Well, kids like film and stuff. Oh,
yeah. It's really beautiful, yeah. And the native children, too, their intuition and their connection hasn't been gone that long, right? Because they have only been enculturated into our culture for a few hundred years.
Right.
So it's at the surface still, all that old knowledge.
Certainly.
And all that connection and how to be with wild animals, because that's also one of my big things, to forge a new relationship that's really not new, it's old, but we just forgot.
Being rediscovered.
Between humans and wild animals, because also the grizzly bear is in danger right now of becoming extinct because they want to delist them from the endangered species list. But not because we have so many bears. No, because as long as there's an endangered species on the land, you can't mine it.
Right.
So they want to delist the grizzly bear so they can trophy hunt them again. But also 28 mining companies are already lined up in Montana. So we're working on that because there really aren't that many bears, but people still have that old story of like, oh, a bear, horrible, let's kill it, a grizzly is a killer. But one of my friends who's a biologist told me they are 98% vegetarians and they find like 200 different plants in a grizzly bear scat. And I walked by a grizzly bear once who was digging tubers out of irises out of the ground. He didn't even look at me, you know, because he was so busy. It was the fall. He had to put on weight because he was hyperphagic, so he could hibernate.
Right.
So all that hype about the bear and how dangerous all these animals are, that's really one of my big, big wishes that we will revisit that.
Well, people are afraid of and demonize that which they don't understand.
Exactly. Uh-huh. So again, I want to tell a new story about that. Because
meaning
bears,
an up-and-coming film?
Yeah. I already did a short film about the bears. Okay. Yeah, on a new story of coexistence.
Right. So as we need to wrap this up, and we're talking about a film, a premiere.
Yeah.
October 29th,
yes.
6 p.m. at the Open Space down off of Montaño in Paseo del Norte.
Yes, yeah, 6500 Coors Boulevard, Albuquerque Open Space Visitor Center.
Easy to find, and hopefully everyone's been there for something
else. Yeah, it's a beautiful space, and I feel so grateful to the people at the Open Space for having it available.
So what's next for you?
For me?
You're going to go back to Montana?
No, I'm going to go to Hollywood to get a film prize.
Okay.
And then I'm going to work a little bit in the Gila area with the wolves again since I'm down here.
Sure.
And do some outreach there, and then I'm heading back to Montana.
Who is giving you the award?
It's the Hollywood Independent Film Festival.
So are there like movie stars there? Yeah. The whole red carpet?
We'll see, yeah. I think there's a red carpet. I haven't been yet. You know, the other awards I didn't get to go. But this one, I'm going to go. I've decided.
I mean, might you run into Brad Pitt? Is it that kind of an event? Or?
Well, it's certainly the area where there's people like that, so but I'm not sure.
Does that help you?
I can tell you when I get back.
Okay. Well, I'm thinking of it as a good opportunity to help fund.
Yes, it's definitely a good,
I'm going to say those people.
Yeah,
but
there's funding opportunities.
Some are liberal. I shouldn't say most are. Mm-hmm. And they've got the disposable income to help people like you.
Yeah, there's definitely funding opportunities. So I will
let me know how many
keep my fingers crossed.
and if you need an assistant to come out for a month in Montana, I'm sure my wife wouldn't care. She would never let me go to Montana by myself.
No.
She loves it.
People are very, often asking me, well, are you going by yourself? Because it's so dangerous in the animals. Oh, my goodness. But actually, I go a lot by myself because I know myself and how what I'm putting out into the wilderness. Right. So I know what I'm getting back because really it's our reflection. You know, like the animals are mirroring back what we are putting out. So if we throw fear at them, and they have little babies, you know, they have cubs, they have to do something.
Right.
But if we come from love and acceptance and fearlessness, I call it fearless, open, and loving. Fearless as in not throwing fear at anybody because I'm going into their living room.
Right.
It's the last sliver. They used to be everywhere, for example, the bears or the wolves.
Certainly.
It's the last sliver of their former habitat, and I'm going there too. So I have to have respect and love for them and be fearless. So I'm not throwing anything out that really aggravates them.
You have to be a good guest.
A very good guest, because I always say, how would you like it if somebody came to your backyard and said, great backyard, but I'm going to spray the bee people with people spray. And I don't want them. I'm going to kick them out because I'm afraid of them, but great backyard.
Yes.
So that's what we're doing to the animals. So, but it's not like either or, animals or us. We can be together. It's just what we put out there.
Well, isn't it just the last, and I do need to wrap this up, but isn't it just the last, I don't know, 100, 200 years that we've done that? Prior to that, human civilization, we all cohabitated pretty well.
Yes, let's get back to that. But in Europe, we've been doing it for a while. But then we came here from Europe with that attitude.
Right.
We didn't even give it a chance.
Sure. Thank you.
We could have cohabitated with the native people too, you know? So there's a lot of parallels between the bison and the native people because we're the same to both of them.
Well, this has just been a great conversation.
Yes, thank you so much.
I appreciate you taking
much.
The time.
Yeah,
we could
likewise.
Go on and on and on, but the station only gives me so much time to speak. So perhaps when you come back from Hollywood or a big adventure, we can do something to follow up on that also.
Great. That would be awesome. So, maybe we can do something about human, wildlife, wilderness coexistence.
It sounds like a great subject. You can go anywhere with that.
Yeah.
So for conversations on KUPR 99.9 in the high desert of Placitas, New Mexico, and of course ABQLive.tv, this has been Conversations with Matthew Bronson and Elke Durr.
Yes. Very good. Thank you.
A great premiere of her film down at the Open Space October 29th of this year. And if you happen to be listening to this on an archive, after that, I'm sure there are going to be ways for you to be able to listen to it or view it.
Yes.
So again, thank you. And until next time, thank you, Elke.
Thank you. And again, go to weboflifefoundation.net or elkedurr.com for updates. Thank you.
Thank you.